Our last case this morning is number 18-12238, Sienna Barnett versus Sarah MacArthur et al. Ms. Presswood, whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm here on behalf of Shauna Barnett, the appellant and plaintiff below in this case. Ms. Barnett was arrested by a sheriff's deputy for Seminole County, Sarah MacArthur, on March 16, 2014. She was arrested for DUI despite the fact that she had absolutely zero alcohol and zero drugs in her system. Deputy MacArthur first thought that Ms. Barnett might be impaired by alcohol, which is why she arrested her. But once she took her to the jail and she went and underwent the breathalyzer test showed that she had triple zeros, zero alcohol whatsoever in her system.
Let me ask you, that's very interesting there, that it mandatorily requires 8 hours of detention, even if the breathalyzer comes back zero, zero, zero. Has anybody ever challenged the constitutionality of that statute?
I don't believe that the statute actually requires the 8 hour detention. The statute.
I thought it did. You couldn't be released. You had to be held for 8 hours. Is that not what Florida law is?
No, Your Honor. There's three prongs under the statute under which it says a person may be released, one of which is blowing 0.05 or less on the breathalyzer. You're allowed to release the person. So that, I think, protects it constitutionally, at least to some extent.
The 8 hour period kicks in only if you don't satisfy subsections A and B of the statute, right?
Yes.
Unless you haven't blown 0.05 or you're no longer under the influence of alcoholic beverage or a chemical substance to
correct.
The extent that you're impaired.
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, the sheriff's policy, however, requires that a person be detained for a minimum of 8 hours, regardless of the other two prongs of this statute. Under no circumstances do they release anyone once they've been arrested for DUI in less than 8 hours. And that's the constitutional problem. There's no evidentiary basis or no legal basis whatsoever to justify that policy under the Constitution, specifically under the Fourth Amendment. The continued detention of Ms. Barnett was clearly in violation of the Constitution, yet the district court granted summary judgment on the Monell claim against the sheriff, and the jury verdict was against Ms. Barnett on the 1983 claim against Sheriff MacArthur, or Deputy MacArthur.
Was the 8 hour litigated at trial despite the summary judgment on the Monell claim?
It was against Deputy MacArthur, yes. The jury actually came back with a question on the continued detention asking whether or not Ms. Barnett could have been released after she blew the triple zeros on the breathalyzer, and we asked the judge to instruct her on the law, on the jury on the law under that. But the district court refused, saying that there was no case law admitted into evidence to say that that was the law. And that was his reason for denying the jury instruction, which I think was critical given evidence, especially the sheriff's stance at trial, that his policies required her to keep the person in jail, whereas the jury instruction said MacArthur had to intentionally violate the Constitution. Their position at trial all along was, well, she had no choice. Our policy required her to keep her in jail for 8 hours. So the jury needed to be instructed on the law that despite what their policy says, the Constitution requires you to release someone once you no longer have probable cause. And that's been the law since 1975, I believe, was when the Gerstein case came out and said you can only hold someone long enough once you know there's no probable cause to basically release them from custody. And that's a lot shorter than 8 hours.
Who had the actual authority to release your client? Could MacArthur have done it, or was that a call that was made above her level?
MacArthur had the discretion when she was before she arrested her, she could have allowed her to go home.
Yes, of course, under, of course, that's true.
Under the sheriff's policy, she no longer had any discretion, according to even the sheriff's office, which was, as I point out in my brief, on the initial appeal of the qualified immunity, their position was MacArthur had discretion for both decisions so that she had qualified immunity, but throughout the trial, it was basically our policy requires this 8-hour detention no matter what. So she no longer had the discretion once she was arrested.
What jury instructions were provided in regards to the legality, if any, of the 8-hour hold policy?
The only instruction that was provided was the standard 11th Circuit instruction on the 1983 claim. There was no instruction either on the 8-hour, which we requested when the jury came out with the question. We asked that the court instruct the jury that you are only allowed to hold someone under the Gerstein case for as long as it takes to release them, but that was not provided. There was nothing to explain to the jury that MacArthur or the sheriff himself could and should have released her as required by the Constitution, regardless of his policy. And I think that obviously was confusing to the jury. They asked about it.
And obviously, given the district court summary judgment ruling, the constitutionality of the 8-hour hold policy was not litigated at trial.
Correct. Against the sheriff. Correct.
Correct.
Yes, Your Honor. And that summary judgment ruling, I mean, the evidence was really undisputed that the sheriff had that policy in the first place on the summary judgment, and it's clearly facially unconstitutional. It's not written down, and of course, but the evidence was undisputed that that's the policy. It's written all over the court or the jail records that she can't be released for 8 hours. MacArthur told her on the way to the jail that she couldn't be released for at least 8 hours. The breathalyzer technician, who was also in charge of their DUI testing, told her right there that, you know, he didn't think that she should be there, but she had to stay for 8 hours.
Well, the district court's, as I read the district court's order, it found that there was no municipal liability because the policy was not facially unconstitutional. Is that the way you read the order as well, or?
Yes, Your Honor, I just disagree that it's not facially unconstitutional. I mean, in light of the case law, starting with Gerstein and the Fifth Circuit, and then the Strickland case, which was a district court case, but this court approved it, saying it was well-reasoned. And that court said you can't just automatically hold someone for 4 hours once you know there's no probable cause. Then a policy saying you have to hold someone for that's arrested for DUI for 8 hours is clearly unconstitutional under the case law. So to me, that's facially unconstitutional. You don't even have to get into the second prong of the test or the alternative prong of the test for the Monell liability on deliberate indifference and showing a pattern or that the sheriff knew some, you know, amount of other people had been held unconstitutionally under this policy.
Is there any suggestion that the policy was dependent on a conclusion that there had been probable cause in the first place to bring this person in? Or is that completely separate from whether you're held?
Not sure I understand the
question. If there were probable cause on the during, say, the sobriety, the field examination, things like that, then you could see a reason why perhaps the person would need to be held if there was probable cause to start with, right?
Correct.
Is there anything that makes us think that policy was only applied to people for whom probable cause initially existed? I think I know your answer. I just want to.
Well, the policy itself, there's no indication that there was any option for whether or not someone, if you think they had probable cause initially when they first arrested them or not. And there's no provision whatsoever that says once you know that there's not probable cause, once your suspicion that someone was under the influence of alcohol has been dispelled by a 000 breathalyzer, they can be released. There's no option like that under their policy. And they all made that clear in their testimony.
And did anyone testify that they actually thought that perhaps your client was under the influence of drugs and that's why she blew a zero? Or were they just purely operating on the policy?
No one, there was no evidence whatsoever that anyone thought Ms. Barnett was under the influence of drugs. They didn't do anything to even investigate that. They looked through her purse, they could see in her car, they didn't ask her any questions about drugs. There was no indication, and MacArthur admitted this in her deposition and at trial, that she had no suspicion that Ms. Barnett was under the influence of drugs. Only after the breathalyzer came back 000s did they say, well, it must have been something, so now we're going to drug test her and hold her anyway, which this court's prior decision made clear is not sufficient to hold someone under the Constitution. It basically amounts to nothing more than bare suspicion.
All right, thank you very much. You saved your time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Poulton.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Tom Poulton. I'm here on behalf of Deputy MacArthur and the sheriff. The problem with these cases is that when somebody blows 000s and it rules out alcohol, it doesn't rule out the possibility of drugs being the source of the impairment. If you look at the arrest paperwork from Deputy MacArthur, she checked yes on alcohol and you for unknown on drugs. So Ms. Barnett blows 000s, they ask her for the urine screen doesn't come back for a month. The issue, in part, I think, here is what is the exact standard that applies to the question of release? We know the standard that applies for taking her in custody in the first place, probable cause. Jury found there was probable cause, right? So we're done with that. Then you move into the continued detention. It's about 6 or 7 hours after the 000. If you look at the paperwork, it was about 5 a.m. that the 000s came back and she's released at noon. What is the standard for whether she has to be released because she blew 000s? Well, first of all, as I say, it doesn't rule out the possibility of drug impairment, and there's no way to know that until after the drug screen comes back.
That's an absence of probable cause by definition.
No, well, no, because the impairment is still there.
No, the suspected impairment is still there because now it's been dissipated by the 000s.
The alcohol as a source of impairment has been ruled out, yes.
The problem factually for you, I think, is that despite the abstract theoretical argument, the officer in this case said she had no suspicion whatsoever that drugs were at play.
She said she didn't know. She doesn't have, listen, okay.
No, that she didn't suspect her.
Right, but
right?
That's
different. That she doesn't know is different than not suspecting. Isn't probable cause based on suspecting at the very least?
She sees impairment. She thinks it's because of alcohol. She doesn't see evidence of drug use. I mean, under that standard, that would mean that anybody out there driving around under the influence of drugs that doesn't have paraphernalia or the smell of marijuana on them is going to be unarrestable because you can't say, I see drugs as the source of your impairment.
You also can't see alcohol.
Well, that's true, but that's true, but that actually proves the point. Because you can't know the source of the impairment, it's the impairment that establishes your initial probable cause.
So a 000, in your opinion, has no bearing on the probable cause calculus.
We're getting into the point that I was trying to make earlier. Once there's probable cause in the field and she's taken to jail, what is the standard, the constitutional standard that requires her to be released based upon the 000 in this case, right? Under the cases cited in plaintiff's brief, Barber, most of them are district court opinions. There's one that was affirmed by this court with the, you know, we agree with the well-reasoned opinion of the district court judge at Strickland. The standard is that you no longer have reasonable doubt as to the presence of probable cause. It's a different standard than probable cause itself. That you, in the 11th Circuit opinion in this case, the language is used that if MacArthur didn't have any cause to continue to detain her, then she would be obligated constitutionally to release her.
That's the standard that most other circuits have used as well.
Yes, the First and the Fifth Circuit are cited in, I think it's Barber versus the City of Tallahassee, Alabama case, which is also cited by the plaintiff. It goes from probable cause at the scene to beyond a reasonable doubt that she is not impaired. And you can't know that just from the 000 of the breathalyzer.
If you are right, don't all those issues require a trial as opposed to saying that the policy is not facially unconstitutional and stopping there?
Well, no, because in this case, probable cause has been established as to the initial arrest.
But that's not what you said is determinative. You just said the constitutional question is, what happens when a 000 is blown and what requirement are there, if any? And I thought you were trying to show that there was suspicion of her having some drug use, which led to the impairment. Isn't that all triable? Especially
no.
When the officer says, I didn't suspect her of drug use?
Respectfully, no, Your Honor, because there is nothing that can rule out the drug use until you get the test back.
Which means, going back to my second question, that 000s for you in this sort of DUI scenario have no effect on the probable cause. Because in every case, the officer is going to think, well, if he or she blew 000s, I thought that they were impaired. I did my job. There has to be another reason for impairment. Ergo, I can hold.
Yes.
So the 000s mean nothing, right?
It's not that, well, no, actually, as an aside, there is a whole scheme, statutory scheme about alcohol, you know, license suspension and whatnot.
That's a different question.
But
the 000s mean nothing.
In terms of the 8-hour hold, no.
Right. It's irrelevant.
Correct. You can have.
That cannot be right. That doesn't mean you lose.
Right.
But it cannot be right constitutionally that the dissipation of a good chunk of your probable cause to arrest is irrelevant in figuring out the amount of time that you can hold.
Well, I guess, respectfully, Your Honor, where our disagreement is the source of the impairment is not a, use your phrase, good chunk of the probable cause. The good chunk of the probable...
What was the only reason that the officer arrested her?
Her performance on the field sobriety test...
Which led the officer to believe what?
That she was impaired.
Because of...
Under the influence of alcohol. Or...
No.
Well,
the other one's unknown. Unknown is not probable cause. It's a supposition, maybe reasonable suspicion, but not PC.
Well,
yeah, I don't know. Does not establish probable cause once the suspected reason is gone.
Well, in that case, then everybody arrested under the statute on drugs because you can't, where there's no paraphernalia nearby, is, you know, there wasn't probable cause for their arrest because you can't know the source of the impairment until a month later.
You're exaggerating. Because in that sort of a scenario, there isn't a sort of test that you can administer at the police station to find out whether someone really is under the influence of narcotics or not. As you said, the urine screen came back weeks or a month later. In that sort of a scenario, it's understood that the system being what it is and human beings running it, you're not going to have anything that, beyond a reasonable doubt, dissipates probable cause.
Well,
I'm not saying I know what the answer is, but I think I know this. The 000s have to be taken into account at some level in the calculus. They can't be worth zero. I don't think that can be right, but I'd like you to persuade me otherwise.
Okay. I understand what you're saying in the hypothetical. In the broad context, all right? But bringing it back to this particular case, it's not just, for example, smelling alcohol on the breath of Ms. Barnett. It's not just her confession that she had a glass of wine. It's all the other cues of impairment that the deputy is arriving or is relying upon to decide there's probable cause. So we start with that. There's probable cause. The jury found probable cause. Plaintiff in this trial was allowed to attack the way she did the test, what she saw, whether it matched the video. There was a robust discussion in this case of whether there's probable cause, and the jury said there was. So start with that fundamental premise. There's probable cause for her arrest. The deputy suspects that it's alcohol-related because, well, for one thing, she's got a passed out drunk passenger next to her, and for another, she's admitted she's had alcohol. But she can't rule out drugs. She thinks it's likely alcohol. She doesn't know whether it's drugs. takes her to the jail, she blows triple zeros, rules out alcohol. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact, it doesn't mean she didn't observe what she observed. It doesn't mean she didn't observe the bad driving. It doesn't mean she didn't observe the cues on the field sobriety tests or exercises. And you're just because she's wrong about the source of impairment doesn't mean she didn't have probable cause to arrest, and it doesn't mean that there isn't reason to hold her for the 8 hours. By the way, Your Honors, I wanted to make a point about the statute. The statute is permissive. It says you may not release until, and the district court read that to mean that those conditions have to be met and you may release, but you don't have to.
Doesn't mean you can follow the statute willy-nilly either.
Well, I agree with you that the statute doesn't define the constitutional right. If you took the statute out of the equation altogether, that wouldn't affect the constitutional right. The question would be whether you could hold her based upon originally probable cause having arisen, and then you get into a situation where, yes, you have triple zeros, but you don't know beyond a reasonable doubt that there wasn't, that probable cause is gone. You just know that that particular source, alcohol, is eliminated.
Here's one problem I think you have, and I'm gonna go through it slowly to make sure it's clear. At trial, who had the burden to show that there was no probable cause?
That varies depending on the upon the claim. One of the courts.
Right, on the claim that the jury decided,
right.
Who had that burden?
On the federal constitutional claim against Deputy MacArthur, the plaintiff had the burden to prove the absence of probable cause. On the state law claim against the sheriff, the burden is on the sheriff to show the presence of probable cause.
Right, which is why I don't think you can rely, as you're trying to do, on the jury's decision, because that was on a flipped burden. That burden makes a difference. That's why we shift the burdens.
Well, they answered no to both questions. I mean, question one, if I may, question one was phrased.
But summary, the second was decided at summary judgment, so the jury didn't make a decision on that.
Well, they didn't address the affirmative defense, held that they were asked, was the defendant, or did defendant sheriff by and through the conduct of defendant MacArthur cause plaintiff Barnett to be falsely imprisoned? And they answered no. The first question was that defendant MacArthur intentionally committed acts that violated plaintiff Barnett's Fourth Amendment right under the United States Constitution not to be arrested or detained without probable cause. And they answered no to that. So I would argue that, in both cases, they're answering yes, there's probable cause. And clearly from you read the trial transcript, that's what the debate is about. The plaintiff attacks the way that the deputy did the test, what she observed, whether it matches the video, and
Wasn't there one technician, it might have been the person who administered the breathalyzer, who told her that she was going to be held for 8 hours no matter what?
Yes.
If that testimony was in the record, doesn't that create an issue of fact about the reason why they held her? Whether they held her because they thought that there might be some other impairment, or that they held her because of the 8-hour policy and nothing else?
Yeah, you're getting now to the first thing that struck me when I read this is that we're getting really into the causation prong of Monell. What is the cause of the detention? Is the cause of the detention the hold policy, or is the cause of the detention the presence of probable cause when she first comes in?
Any of those things. The district court just said facially constitutional statute and policy, end of story. Didn't address the issues you're bringing up today, although they might have been presented to it. Didn't address causation and proximate cause under Monell.
Right.
Didn't address any of those issues. And so I'm asking you, if there's disputed testimony as to why she was held after blowing the triple zeros, doesn't that create an issue of fact on that element of Monell?
I don't think there was a dispute of fact about why she was held. The testimony was universally it was because of the hold policy, not because the
causation. And you've lost your argument on impairment on narcotics being a possible ground.
Except that Your Honor, I respectfully disagree, because in this case the jury has found the presence of probable cause from
probable
the get-go.
Probable cause to arrest, not to hold.
But when she is okay. But it's not probable cause to arrest for driving under the influence of alcohol. It's probable cause for driving under the influence of alcohol or a controlled substance. They rule out alcohol. The fact that they rule out alcohol doesn't mean she wasn't driving under the influence.
She was arrested for a controlled substance.
It's the statute.
No. The statute says that, but what did the officer write on the A form?
She wrote yes on alcohol and unknown on drugs.
No, it doesn't get you anywhere, in my opinion.
I understand, Your Honor.
If she had just checked unknown on drugs and nothing on alcohol, would she have had? Would that have added up to something that would have been acceptable?
I mean, hypothetically, if she doesn't know, if she just has absolutely no clue as to the source of impairment, I don't see how that changes anything. Because, like I say, there is a statutory scheme that's peculiar to alcohol with certain consequences. Of blowing .0 whatever, you get your license suspended for a certain period of time. There are certain consequences the higher you go. That's independent of whether you're driving under the influence of alcohol or a controlled substance to the extent your normal faculties are impaired. And in that respect, I would argue you have to be very careful not to be distracted by that the 000 completely eliminates the possibility that she was impaired to the point that you don't have a reasonable doubt about what you
said. In order to be released, you don't have to have completely eliminated the possibility that you could be impaired. That is not the standard.
The standard under the cases cited in appellant's brief, the First, the Fifth Circuit, are that once you're arrested on probable cause, the standard to release is it appears beyond reasonable doubt that your reason for probable cause is gone. Okay, and the reason for probable cause here is not just alcohol. It's the driving, the performance in field sobriety, and the interaction. And once that happens, and we know that there's probable cause based upon the jury verdict, the causation issue is what underlying constitutional right is being violated by this hold policy? And since they don't know, just because they don't know what the source is doesn't mean that it's a constitutional violation just because they've ruled out alcohol but don't know what the other sources might be.
Could they have held her in jail until they got the urinalysis back?
Well, it was a month later.
Right. Could they have held her in jail until they got the urinalysis back?
No. They hold them for 8 hours. They're mirroring the state statute, using that as the basis for doing it. There's some science discussed in the testimony from the experts about the elimination of alcohol. She'd be entitled to bond out. She'd be, have a first appearance if she were held for more than 24 hours.
We already know she doesn't have any alcohol, so the elimination of alcohol and the science behind that can have nothing to do with how long she's held, because there is 0.000 alcohol. But do we have any science on drugs? If there's this great concern that she's high, don't they have to look for some signs that she's no longer high or something?
Well, put it this way, Your Honor. If somebody were pulled over, there were no indication specifically alcohol, no indication specifically of drugs, but plenty of indication of impairment, and they were taken to the jail, and they blew 000s, you're going to put them back on the road? Even though they're clearly impaired, but they're impaired by drugs, but you can't prove it because you didn't find a crack pipe or marijuana residue in the seat next to them? I mean, that's the quandary they're in, and the mere fact of blowing 000s doesn't vitiate the probable cause, and it doesn't mean beyond reasonable doubt that you've ruled out other potential sources of intoxication.
One of the arguments you've made here today, which is that the belief or probable cause that she might have been impaired in some other way as opposed to alcohol. Was that argument presented to the district court and it just didn't address it because it found the hold policy facially unconstitutional?
On summary judgment, I don't know. I know that at trial that was a major theme
Policy wasn't at issue anymore at trial.
Well, but the jury was told that was the policy, and they were told why it's the policy, and they were told repeatedly, we can't rule out drugs or alcohol. Their own expert.
But the policy was not at issue at the trial. They weren't able to challenge the policy at trial in constitutional terms, right?
I understand that, Your Honor, but if there's no underlying constitutional violation, then the policy doesn't enter into it.
I know, except if the policy is the unconstitutional part of the thing, then it all goes around in a circle.
It all leads us back to the same point, which is what happened at the roadside.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Poulton.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Presswood.
Your Honor, we dispute that there was even sufficient evidence in the record to show that there was probable cause for the arrest, let alone the continued detention. Deputy MacArthur, this was her first or second DUI arrest. She admitted in her testimony that she didn't even know what the cues were for the field sobriety test and that she had no idea how to take into consideration the fact that Ms. Barnett had medical injuries from a car accident into her consideration of her performance on the test.
You've got a jury verdict against you on that point. I mean, obviously, you're arguing that the verdict was against a clear weight of the evidence, and I understand that argument, but you've got at least some determination that there was probable cause, right?
And again, we asked for the jury instruction on letting the jury know that a reasonable officer has to take into consideration the totality of the circumstances, including exculpatory evidence, which everything they point to about what they think shows probable cause, there was an equally plausible reason that was not incriminating at all. For instance, Ms. Barnett, he mentions that she admitted to drinking alcohol. Well, she admitted to drinking part of a glass of wine 10 hours earlier, and both experts agreed there's no way she could have been impaired if that was what she had consumed as far as alcohol is concerned. Both experts agreed that MacArthur did not properly administer the field sobriety tests, and the case law says you can't rely, a reasonable officer can't rely on those tests for probable cause if the tests are not administered and evaluated correctly, which MacArthur even admits that she didn't know how to do properly. So the probable cause that they relied on in the first instance was bare minimum at the best, and we submit there was no probable cause at all, and the jury did not decide that there was no probable cause. The verdict question was whether
that there was probable. The jury didn't decide that there was probable cause.
That there was not probable cause or probable cause, because what they were asked is the defendant MacArthur intentionally committed acts that violated Barnett's Fourth Amendment rights under the Constitution to be arrested or detained without probable cause. So their whole line of questioning and argument was that MacArthur didn't intentionally violate her constitutional rights. She just did it because she didn't know what she was doing. She was a new officer. She didn't know how to do the test properly. She didn't know how to evaluate him. She didn't do it intentionally. So if you're going to hold anyone liable, then hold the sheriff liable. And the jury...
I find that argument pretty persuasive. The problem is that those were the jury instructions that Ms. Barnett requested. How do we deal with that?
We also requested jury instructions explaining that it's not reasonable for an officer to rely on field tests that they know are not administered properly. MacArthur obviously knew that she didn't know what the cues were. She knew it at trial, that she didn't know what the cues were for the field sobriety test. The way she gave the instructions was contrary to the sheriff's own policies. If you watch the video itself, the driving cues, they're not something that a normal, reasonable officer would jump to the conclusion that someone's impaired by alcohol or drugs or anything else. She was driving normally, and it contradicts what she put in her probable cause affidavit and her offense report. Even both experts agreed that she didn't almost hit a mailbox, for instance, and there's several other issues in there.
Turn to the jury questions for a second. So your instructions. So your argument is that although Barnett requested those instructions, the instructions that were given, they were part of a larger set of instructions that were requested. And without the entire request being granted, it ended up being misleading to the jury. Is that what you're asserting?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And also, the intentional part should not have been in the instructions in this case, because it wasn't a question of whether MacArthur intentionally did it. It was a question of whether objectively it was reasonable to believe that there was probable cause. That was the question that we should have presented to the jury. And the case law says when it's something fundamental like that in the jury instructions or the verdict form that's incorrect and basically misled the jury as to what the law is, that we don't, our failure to request it or object at the time is excused because it goes to the fundamental fairness of the trial. My whole point being that the probable cause to arrest in the first place was very questionable, and there certainly wasn't probable cause for a continued detention. Just saying that there could have been something is not sufficient under the Constitution to hold someone for 8 hours. It could have been, and more likely was, if there was any impairment at all, it was because Ms. Barnett had an injury, which she told the officer repeatedly. And there was evidence also that her medical doctor said she could not perform the one-legged stand or the heel-to-toe walking in therapy, I think a few days before she was arrested. So if they're going to guess at what the supposed impairment was, the most logical reason would be her injuries, not some drugs, that there was no evidence whatsoever that there was any drug taken at all. And by the way, they do have tools available to them if they want to determine if someone is on drugs. They could have had a drug recognition expert, for instance, on either come to the scene or at the jail when they did the DUI testing to determine whether there was any indication whatsoever of drugs. The only field sobriety test that is that can detect drugs at all is the vertical nystagmus test, which MacArthur didn't know how, and both experts agreed, had no idea how to perform, so it was invalid.
Thank you very much, Ms. Presswood. Thank you both. We're in recess until tomorrow morning. All right.